Hi, I'm Mary Novick in Vancouver, and I'm going to read from my novel Conceit. This scene takes place in 1631 in London when my main character Peg is 17. Her father, who's the poet John Donne, has decided that he is dying, and Peg has been sitting with him on top of his deathbed, helping him sort through his manuscripts. Peg found the tortoise comb that King James had given to her father. She pulled it gently through his beard, and after a time his head relaxed upon the pillow, and his lips retracted to help her shape his mustache. That was enough for now. In the morning she would shave him. "I've moved your clothes stool beside the fire. If you're ready, father, I'll help you stand." He looked at the apparatus suspiciously, trying, Peg supposed, to contrive some way to keep the body's wastes inside. Yet there it was, the red velvet seat, offering relief in the warm firelight. He lurched into an upright position and stared at the thing. At last his yellowed toenails descended, then recoiled from the cold planking. Peg found some stockings to put on him, and his legs descended cautiously once more. While he shuffled to the close stool, she collected the condemned poems from the bed and stacked them on the table, satisfying herself that she had seen them all before. Once on the seat, he swiveled to face the blaze, calling out, "Bring me the bundle to be destroyed." Soon his greatest poems were nothing but charred fragments on the grate. There was something absurd about this act of renunciation, since the poems had made the rounds of all his friends. The most complete collection was right above his head, in the chamber that her brothers shared when they were home. She was now more familiar with the verses than they were, having copied out all his love poems for herself. After her father had warmed himself sufficiently beside the embers, he hobbled back and she helped him climb into the bed. As she settled him, the sleeve of his nightshirt slid up, exposing his forearm. She gripped his arm and stared at it, wondering which valves to press to stop the blood from flowing back into his heart. The dark veins stood out in milky flesh that might have belonged to a saint in Catholic times. Yet this arm had performed the most erotic acts, then written about them in poems passed heatedly from friend to friend. When a man lay with a woman, did his hands support the weight of his body? Did his knees act as a fulcrum? For surely a man did not balance upon his toes. That was the woman's part, she knew, for she had heard that a woman danced on her feet when lying underneath a man. Even as her father was sacrificing them on the fire, the poems were being copied and recopied, read aloud to lovers and silently in beds, for no one who had read such verses would willingly destroy them. Even now, women all over England were rising in passion, having read, under cover of night, erotic poems written by her father. Yet he had betrayed his promises to Anne, and betrayed them anew that very day, burning the records of the love they had shared on this marriage bed. Had Anne danced on her feet where he now lay? Had this arm curled round to give her pleasure? What if, that day along the secret river, when Isaac Walton had crawled out on the narrow rock beside her, Peg had twisted his legs in hers and refused to release him, twisted and tormented, danced on her feet, until she took his love from him by force, as the carp had drawn the melters to her and forced them to deliver all their melt. Her father had now fallen asleep with his arm held straight up in the air, being subjected to a prolonged and close inspection. "Tomorrow," she said sternly to the arm, "I will give you a good scrubbing."